So welcome to the Extension Luncheon. It's a great pleasure to have so many of you here today. I suspect we're one of the largest lunches here of any of the divisions, and that's pretty cool. Before I introduce our two speakers today, I'd like to acknowledge our past Vice President, Des Lane, our newly elected Vice President, Lucy Bradley. Where is she? And we're going to give acknowledge her. Congratulations, and then a year from now she will take over after a year from now she'll take over the honours. So it's really great. And then we have at least one past VP, Gary Bachman. Thank you. I don't know if we have any others, but okay, so I'm delighted to introduce Angela O'Callaghan and M.L. Robertson, who he actually has a real name. It's on his name tag, but apparently he doesn't go by that.
It's not a good one for this country.
Okay. Maurice. There's nothing wrong with that, really. Yeah. But anyway, we digress.
Wait till you get to the second one.
They're going to talk to us this afternoon about Desert Green, bringing, sad, isn't it? Bringing desert horticulture professionals together in Las Vegas. And I was so delighted when Angela agreed to set up this when I asked her several months ago. So without further ado, let me pass over to our speakers this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay, he's ML, I'm Angela.
Just in case you weren't sure.
All right. I'd like to introduce you to an agave Americana, okay, here in the Great American Southwest. Somebody has lawns and we just look at them and say, do you have livestock? at any rate, so that's my front lawn and we can go from there.
Mine looks like a jungle. I'm originally from Florida and lived in Hawaii and whatnot, so I still have lots of palm trees. And we were talking about what we came here and started doing. I did ornamental horticulture and palm trees and things. Now I'm basically, the biggest part is hemp and cannabis. Yay. And we each, you know how Extension is, we each change. So there's who we are.
Yep. Okay. You
want to
start off?
No, you can. Okay. We've worked together for nearly 20 years.
Yeah, it's like we finish each other's sentences, and it's really alarming. At any rate, Desert Green is a collaboration of Extension and tons of commercial hort landscape professionals throughout the Great American Southwest. And we also have people come from other states as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But we have everything from the Shade Tree Council to the Water Authority and everybody else that we can possibly get to be interested in good, sound horticulture for the desert Southwest.
So a lot of people think, well, what can you grow here? And of course, if you look around the various establishments, the casinos, they try to grow everything here and use lots of water for it. But it's more than just cactus, and it's more than just what I like to call lushy, gushy plants that should stay in Southern California or Jersey or somewhere back east.
Okay, so 23 years ago was the first Desert Green, and the population of Vegas was 300,000 and change. And now the greater population of the greater Las Vegas area is over 2 million. But we still get the same 4.25 inches of rainfall every day. And are we still in a drought?
Who knows? We've been getting more rain, and I have a colleague and best friend that lives in New Mexico, and he keeps saying, you have our rain, give it back. Because it says, it's not supposed to be raining in Vegas, it's supposed to be raining here. Our monsoon has started, and it's in Vegas.
Yeah, right. So the whole idea is that you're going to have people who are going to do more than just mow and blow, which is what a lot of horticulture was here. There needed to be some kind of venue where people could actually get honest to God training in good horticultural practices. So Helen Stone I don't know what Helen Stone's background is, but...
Well, she worked with the horticultural industry, and she had a vision 23 years ago, and these were her goals. She wanted a horticultural landscape-oriented that encompassed the green industry as a whole conference, and then she also wanted to do a publication. And for some of us, I see out there, we all remember when publications came in the mail, you could hold them in your hands, they were paper, and you had due dates when your articles were due so they could go to press. And so she started the two of those. So, and they were intermixed. The Southwest Trees and Turf is still a publication, comes out periodically, and it was the main one to advertise it. And so we began this venue to do this training with the professionals in the Southwest, particularly Southern Nevada.
And the goal was that sooner or later, when, you know, this wasn't an if, but when there was some money coming in, but then scholarships would be offered to college students to kind of increase interest in horticulture as a career.
And money also for those organizations that helped in supporting the council that was directing this endeavor would also get money back. And so I know none of you have this problem, but you love dealing with finance with universities. And so our memberships to such organizations as here, we could funnel through that extra $500 to $1,000 that came in without trying to write in blood to the dean why we should be members. So Bob Morris was a professor here when I came aboard, and he had started a similar, on a smaller scale, training session or conference. And again, with universities, we're all used to universities, and they come up with ideas like, oh, this program is really successful. Let's turn it over to somebody else. And you can start some new program. Ever heard of that? We had an excellent, this is two bitter people talking. We had an excellent incarceration or prison program that we were told by the dean to go, it had to go away. We never have heard why. But anyway, he was not interested in starting this up. What had happened was when the university turned it over to private enterprise, because they're always much better at all this, I'm being sarcastic for those that don't know me. It went down the tubes. And so now there was another vacuum. And so when Helen approached him, I was a brand new faculty member, and Bob said, here, it's your turn. And so we began meeting as a group with as many people in the green industry, especially like the golf course industry and the landscape architects and others that would be interested in this.
So the Las Vegas Water Authority also became an integral part of doing this, and then once we had this whole committee, then it was time to start recruiting the people who are potential funders, like sponsors, and like other kind of vendors. So as everybody who's ever done a conference knows, vendors and sponsors are your lifeblood. So they were really important to it. And another thing that we found is that every year you have to change the curriculum a little bit. So every year there is something different. Every year there is something that is meeting more needs, we trust. And it's based on what people say they need if they're going to do their job successfully.
We use the extension model. What
needs
better
assessment.
Needs assessment, you know? Hi, you're a new faculty member. Now do a needs assessment of your community and find out what they need. And we do that every year. Through surveys and whatnot. And we learned the first year when I went to, we had it at Mirage, and Jim Gibbons, who was a top name in horticulture years ago in this community, offered the Mirage and gave us a good deal and whatnot. But when they approached me on the last day of the conference and said, you owe us $17,000. And I said, okay. And I said, I'll talk to you after lunch, because I wanted the lunch to go through. And they said, you can put it on your credit card. And I said, yeah, that won't go over very well at home. So I said, let me tell you how the university works. You'll be lucky if you get paid in 30 days. So having a good funding and not running it through the university was something that was important. And we eventually had a foundation and non-profit form.
Okay, so every year, as I said, the training differs a little bit. So last year, these were our choices: arboriculture, design challenges, golf and sports, turf. I know I just said that thing about turf, but forgive me. Irrigation, pesticides, and plants. And for the next one, arboriculture. I hope people can see this picture here. This is one of those what not to do when you're pruning a Palo Verde tree, because you really probably don't want to see it pollarded. But some of the first trainings for an actual professional certification was in arboriculture. And it covers what you must do, what you need for the test, and then again, what not to do. Don't do this. And then the exam is through the ISA, the International Society for Arboriculture. And they do this every year at the end of their session.
And, you know, like everywhere, we probably all have what not to do or tree and plant abuse that we try to teach people on that.
Okay, let me tell the pesticide story because it's mine. Okay.
Well, I started it.
Well, yeah, I know. Okay.
All right.
The state horticulture specialist used to be the guy who ran the state IPM program. And when he retired, suddenly there was no state pesticide applicator training for restricted use pesticides. And I thought nothing of it. None of us really thought about it but we were still offering pesticide certification training in the prison, so that when guys got out of the prison, they could get certified from our State Department of Ag. Well, apparently people heard about this. So at a tree care seminar, one of my master gardeners overheard people saying, the only way you can get pesticide training in this state is that you're in prison. So we thought that was probably not the sort of thing we really wanted to have people believing. So we started,
or promoting.
There are many prisons waiting for you. So then we did this survey. Now, take it away.
Well, and we initiated it, as Angela said, and we ran it. And if you've ever tried to get CEUs, especially out of state, and we have people from all over the Southwest, they may have licenses in Nevada or Arizona or California, but live in North Dakota or whatever. I don't know why you'd live in North Dakota. Hope there's no one here. I'm one of those, if you don't have palm trees, I don't want to live there.
But Ireland has palm trees.
I know it does. Near Parliament has palm trees. That's another, we digress. But anyway, we ran this, we worked with the Department of Ag, we got the certifications for here, and then reached out to other states. But I was thrilled to death when the Department of Ag said, we will take that segment over. But they've been very helpful, and we love our Department of Ag, and I'm trying to work closer with them. We're still working our working relationships with cannabis. It's hard for me to get through many sentences without cannabis.
Used to be palms.
They kind of look alike. I was at a garage sale the day after 420 last year, and I had a palm shirt that was a camo palm, and I go, well, I see you're still celebrating. I thought, no, but you are, because you can't tell the difference between palm trees and cannabis. But
right. So, since there had always been an IPM segment in Desert Green, what we did was we added this pesticide applicator training, so people can go through the whole curriculum for pesticide applicator, and then the next day take the pesticide certification test. And in Nevada, you have to be certified to apply restricted use pesticides, but you only have to be licensed if you are running a pesticide company. So I was behind a truck today that said licensed and certified. And I was thinking a lot of people would probably look at that and think that that was kind of just a little more than you needed, but they're actually two separate things. So when we were doing our presentations to the prisons, they would get a certificate from us, and then when they got released from the Huskow, they could go to the Department of Ed and get their card.
That's a technical term.
Yes, that's the science term. They could get their card so that they could be going. Sorry.
We've spent far too much time in prison, the two of us. In fact, one federal prison we worked in, they thought we were married. I do. I have palm trees here.
Switch over. Okay.
So anyway, one of the things that we did, and Angela's queen of a lot of things, including the Master Gardeners, but we were able to hire this gentleman here, Master Gardener. Well, we hired him. We just never paid him. We actually didn't hire him, but he volunteered. But he was a Master Sergeant. Master Sergeant?
Yeah. Master Sergeant in the Army.
Army. And if you're going to have someone run volunteers for a conference, ex-military is the way to go. He kept them in line, and if you've ever worked with volunteers, that's what you need, and a large, high-powered cattle prod.
Yeah, but the volunteers really, if there were no volunteers working in this, the conference could not happen, period. Could not happen.
And they buy for this, and if you, it's a big deal, and the only way you can work on this committee is if someone dies or quits working at it, literally. And if you come and you are disruptive, like we had one last year, no soup for you or conference. You're out. And we talked a little bit about this, money for those that were part of it, and also the Master Gardeners got money as well out of it.
Which really helped the program. We have kind of a finite pool of money.
I know you guys probably don't have that.
But.
All right, so some examples of what we have. We get together. If you've ever done a conference, a lot of people think, oh, you just get together and put it together in a meeting and that's it. We meet the month after, usually December of the conference, to go over what has happened at the conference, what did we learn, what do we need to do different. And then every month after that, we have monthly meetings until about July. And in fact, I have one this afternoon that I have to get to, where we plan it out. We decide on what's going to be the theme and what are going to be the speakers, and we ask the community that's represented to help us with speakers.
And we get continuing ed hours, as Mel mentioned. So we get them from California. We have in the past also gotten them from Arizona and Utah, and it kind of depends on the state and what the state feels like issuing. But people can, as Mel said, you can be living in one state and have certifications. Is somebody bowling? I prefer the idea of bowling. But you know, you can be living in Idaho and have your Nevada licensure, or you can be living wherever. So people get CEUs, even though we only have five places listed, including the irrigation people and the golf course superintendents. But they're not necessarily only from those states.
Okay, this is just a quote. You can read it.
I'm not sure in the back.
Okay, or maybe not. It'll be online. Okay, so for the last 22 years, between 250 and 350 people have participated. Somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 people total. That's a lot of students. And if you add it up, it's 2 days of training, about 36 classes in those 2 days. And so people from all over, and we have speakers from all over as well. And this is the advertisement for this year.
Sponsors, I just put in there, a lot of sponsors are incredibly generous to Extension. We really rely on sponsors because, well, for instance, when the undergraduate plant ID test was going to be happening and they needed more plants, so the students would have some plants to ID, one of our local nurseries drove up in his pickup truck, brought in 35 plants from the nursery so that the kids would have good good plants to be ideal.
So, and that's kind of my job. I'm one of those, what? You're going to charge us? This isn't free? And you want them back, too? We have a lot of sponsors, a lot of vendors. My mother was from New York, not New York City, but I still have that New York attitude on a lot of things. Not as bad as she has, but but close. But Department of Ag, again. Dennis Swartzel has been one of the driving forces. He was with UNLV as their horticultural director. NV Energy has been wonderful because of safety and trying to keep arborists from being electrocuted. That's always a good thing. Sunrise Nursery in Phoenix and other nurseries, Mountain States. Two of our former people, Linus Mills at the bottom was our director when I came here. Both of these gentlemen have passed away. And you want to talk
about? Established a couple of scholarships in their names for students so that they can get to the conference and get that credential as they're getting ready to graduate.
And Linus was a true extension person to the very end. He died in the hospital on the phone talking to his wife with a large to-do list of who he was going to visit during the week to come. We have one of the most prestigious awards that we hand out is the Tommy Asu Award for Outstanding Horticulture. And this is me giving it to Kathy Costa, who was the recipient. Was she last year?
No.
2 years?
2 years ago. And she was the California State Plant Pathologist.
And
before that, she'd been Nevada State pathologist.
And Tommy Asu, just quick overview. He and his family were among the few Japanese that were not sent to a concentration camp because he knew how to grow ornamentals and vegetables in the Mojave Desert. And as such, he provided food for the Hoover Dam crews. And so his family was spared that. I did not know Tommy Sr., but I did know his son, and they were a wonderful family and a wonderful horticulturist. This is Angela with her award. This is me with Angela's award with my finger over her name because I can't find mine. Another award.
Oh, yeah, the Nevada Association of Landscape Architects has occasionally given an award, so I got that. And that's a horrible picture.
It was the only one I could find.
I'm so sorry.
I have 300,000 pictures and I couldn't find the historical ones from this. This is me with my wine bottle armadillo holding it because I couldn't find that award either that I won. That was close enough.
And Norm Schilling on the left here, he was the one who, he and I share a radio show every other week. I'm on, and then every other week he's on. It's a 5-minute, and I always say, okay, Norm is doing, here we are doing planting, this is what you're going to do, and these are the plants, and then there's Angela, and she's the, gee whiz, it's science! Perfect. So we kind of balance each other out a little bit, and then the second person from the left is D, and the gentleman who looks mighty unhappy there is American Gardener, named Cliff Wood, and he's been a master gardener now for 15 years. And he's a man, whenever he gets his award for being, you know, have done another 100 hours or another 200 hours of master gardener volunteer time, I will bring the mic up to him and I say, Cliff, would you like to say something? No. He doesn't like being taken in pictures. And then Kat Nunez is from Cal Poly Pomona, and she won the award, I think, in 2016. And this award is actually funded by the Nevada Landscape Architects and the
Lynn Mills.
The Lynn Mills Award and the Golf Course Association gives the supports those. And so, then that's our little brief synopsis.
So what we're at now is we have a foundation, we have a company that runs it. I think Rose and Rosa Epperson, it's called Epicenter, which is not good in this part of the world, and she runs it, and more of a charitable outfit. I don't think they make any money, but she has a wonderful crew, and so it's nice Over the 20-some years, we've evolved from a bunch of people getting together and saying, we have this dream of having horticultural training, to a presentations and conference that we hope will be around for a while. We are at Texas Station. We're no longer at the Mirage. We were only there 1 year. I had to stand in front of the Cookie and Coke snack bar saying, you tourists, go away. These Cokes are costing me $5 a piece and the cookies are $4.50, and it's for my conference. But we're at the Texas Station. It's a nice place to stay, and we'd hope to see any of you there. And if you'd like to speak, get in touch with either one of us. We're always looking for new speakers with new ideas in horticulture. Thank you very much. Oh, damn, are we good? 101.
Thank you so much, Angela and Mel. I'm sure there's some questions, so you cannot escape yet.
Oh.
No, there's no question.
Can you tell that we work together?
Yes, a really good dog and pony show. Very impressive.
We like it.
Yes, Dad.
With the hemp industry right now, in case you're from the federal government. Once it's legal, I will. A lot of universities, I have to go through. I'm becoming very familiar with legal on campus, because when I go for any kind of license or anything, I have to go through legal, and there's a whole process. And I'm the main person doing it, because they're still a little bit afraid on campus. But there's an emeritus professor and an educator in Northern Nevada. And then Marisha. Wave, Marisha. She's a part-time employee, and she knows everyone there is to know in the cannabis business.
And actually, I'm heading down to the extension office after this, where we have how many plants in the ground?
Oh, 20 or so. This is my second year in growing hemp at the office. So if you want to come by, touch it, smell it. Don't roll in it like catnip, although you want to. I love hemp. There are a lot of shops in town. It is legal here.
You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a marijuana dispensary.
I live in North Las Vegas, and Save the Children group is already trying to say we have more. We have 8 or 10 in North Las Vegas. I drive by several on my way home. And,
but don't worry, because if you want it delivered, you can call up and have your marijuana delivered to you.
And so, but it's pot, 1-800-POT. But the hemp industry is what I'm really promoting, and all the thousands of products. My colleague from New Mexico and I spent some extra time in Amsterdam last year doing research.
Yeah, sure. Are there any more questions?
And the gummy bears are not kosher at these shops, and the brownies are not gluten-free, I can tell you from experience.
Please join me a bit.